Welcome to another episode of our podcast, Let's Talk TriDelta. Thanks for joining us. I'm Karen White, TriDelta CEO. And as part of our Summer of Sisterhood, we're continuing to have important conversations around TriDelta's Lead Now Action Plan and our work to create a more inclusive and equitable member experience for our Black, Indigenous, and Sisters of Color. On the forefront of this work are TriDelta's collegiate chapters and our members who are really passionate about their own DEI efforts and journey. Recently, I visited with one collegiate member who is making great strides in her chapter, on her campus, and in her community. Melanie Velasquez is a senior from our Epsilon Rho chapter at the University of San Francisco. She serves as her chapter's Director of Diversity and Inclusion and recently contributed to a DEI workshop that was presented at Collegiate Leadership Conference for all of our chapters back in March. Here's our conversation. Melanie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Super excited.
Well, you were pivotal in starting your chapter's DEI committee a few years ago. Can you tell me what was the impetus for you and your committee to make this a priority for Epsilon Rho?
At the time, it was a couple of years ago, Abby Austin, our chapter president at the time, she created the Diversity and Inclusion Committee. It sounded something like I really wanted to get involved with. I think the core, the reasons that we wanted to do that is because we noticed that we had a lot of diversity in our chapter.
Yeah. Yep. Many across many identities in Epsilon Rho.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, I'm aware that in this kind of work, right, the work your committee's doing, the work TriDelta has been engaged in around our Lead Now efforts, a lot of it involves having really uncomfortable conversation. In your mind, how does that lend itself to develop healing and understanding, right, all the stuff that needs to happen to get to the other side of those conversations?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a lot of difficult conversations within the committee, but honestly, for the most part, we're really lucky to be on the same page on a lot of things. But, you know, there's, of course, more education that we all have to do. But I really just encourage having uncomfortable conversations. Those are the types of things to me that make the most change. So when you talk about like heavy hitting topics, like it's a chance to go eye to eye with someone, and that is a chance to grow, and growth isn't comfortable. And that's how progress will be achieved. When you can show someone like the facts of a situation and how both of you can change after the conversation, it creates humanity, honestly, like having those conversations like face to face, or I guess now virtual. But yeah, these things don't happen overnight. It can feel like it takes forever to get to someone. But honestly, even just introducing a hard topic can make great strides, because you are now introducing a new concept that someone can marinate on, or, you know, do further research. And
the simplicity of what you just said, uncomfortable conversations create humanity. That's exactly right. The understanding that takes place as part of that sort of messy middle of a conversation, and then the potential for healing on the other side of that, defining all of that as humanity is so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That is amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I think on many levels, that kind of creates this concept that's tied to the individualism of this, right? That everybody's on their own journey to understanding and leaning into DEI and the concepts and constructs, right, around DEI. Tell me how you have navigated those feelings that can crop up, right, in the best of us around, you know, like feeling defensive, feeling shame and guilt as part of those conversations. How do you navigate all of that?
Absolutely. I mean, I have been no stranger to feeling defensive myself, especially, as I said, when I was in high school and creating all kinds of trouble. But it used to be really hard for me. First, I need to take a step back, take a second and gather my thoughts, so I can also avoid being defensive myself, because that will only escalate emotions further. And that's kind of where you lose the whole like face-to-face real connection that you have with another person, because then they are hesitant to listen to you. But again, super important to even begin the conversation. And then after you take a second to step back,
take a minute.
Right. Yeah. Just acknowledge what that person is feeling and thinking, and also ask them questions about their beliefs, because, you know, they learned this somewhere. And where is that information coming from? Is it from personal experience? Asking them like questions to understand their own beliefs, because if you begin to break down those original thoughts, sometimes you can kind of get to where the root was of the belief and begin to unlearn some harmful things. It sounds simple, easier said than done. And yeah, of course it'll take time, but to best like navigate those like high emotions, it's best to focus on where they're coming from and tackle it from there and meet them at their level. I mean, of course, unless it presents like a current danger to your safety, then it's right, best to end the conversation right there. But with most people, that's how I would, or how I navigate those kinds of feelings, because uncomfortable conversations can sometimes lead to those really like high emotions, intense pented up feelings, especially because I think a lot of us were taught that, you know, oh, politics are not for like the dinner table. Right. But I think now it's more important than ever because we can't be complicit in our opinions.
Yeah. There were some taboo topics, right, that I think are no longer taboo. And I appreciate you sharing your approach. I think so many of us can learn from that, that ability to kind of just take a pause, and this fact that, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, right? And these things do take time. Right. So your chapter, Epsilon Rho, right, University of San Francisco, presented at Collegiate Leadership Conference, and you, your presentation there during our Delta Demos, right? Delta Demos bring chapters' best practices to light, allow other chapters to get in and talk to sisters from across the country. What are you doing? Wow, we'd love to do that. Can we learn more? It's really a cool concept for peer-to-peer learning that happens, right? You all stepped up. You said, yes, we would love to present on DEI at CLC. Your presentation at Allyship really centered. Tell us how you define allyship and describe maybe how self-education is a big piece of becoming and being an ally.
I define allyship as a person who is actively doing the work to dismantle systems of oppression and using their privilege. Honestly, sometimes being an ally is losing things yourself and putting marginalized identities before you. An ally is someone who is taking the time to have hard conversations with people in their surroundings or community, or someone who is mobilizing to others to disrupt oppression and even educating themselves on a topic. It's not easy at all. And it shouldn't be easy because there's a lot of systems put in place for it to not be easy. But self-education is super important because we can't depend on marginalized identities to educate right others, because Google is free and the news is out there. I recommend starting with like Google and the news. I mean, of course, depending on what news, but as a journalist, was a major NPR, New York Times, and PBS are my favorites. So those are great places for me to look about information about current events and being critical when you're consuming media. Critical media consumption is super important when self-educating, to look at the credibility of the sources and see where they're coming from and what angle and what approach or perspective they're taking. It's important for allies to do the work because that's how we will progress, because we can't depend on marginalized identities to do the work for us, or else that's not allyship at that point. That's asking for free education, and people pay so much money to go to school to even like learn a little bit about it. But starting with some readings, using Google is a great tool to look up anti-racist reading recommendations or historical figures. And that's how our committee, the DEI committee of Epsilon Rho, we use all those internet sources to our advantage, and it's super helpful. I mean, it's even more helpful that we're in school and learning how to critically consume media.
Yeah. So as I was going to say, like, let's not lose the fact that you are a media studies major, journalism minor. That it's amazing, right? That you've stepped into this role with the resources right, that you've discovered, that you know, and the approach that you've now learned to take to be a critical consumer of media. So I think that's a big piece of your committee's success. Now, Epsilon Rho was the first Panhellenic chapter at the University of San Francisco to even implement a DEI committee. That to me is huge. And so you've done a lot of work within the chapter, but you've also talked about taking, you know, the education outside the walls of your chapter, certainly to the rest of Tri-Delta, right, at CLC, but in your campus community and then even beyond.
So yeah, I mean, it's been incredible because we started this 2 years ago, almost a little over 2 years ago now, and we have expanded Panhellenically, and other chapters at USF campus, Panhellenic chapters, have started their own efforts towards DEI, which is awesome that we were the first to, you know, kind of get in there, pave the way for those changes to be made. And we're actually looking to all work together in the next semester. Yeah, we met like Panhellenically, and I'm excited to see what we're going to do next, because there's so much that I would like to do with my last semester. I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, the things that we've learned that it takes a lot to get others to participate in teaching around us, because, you know, as I said, allyship is hard and it shouldn't be easy. So starting to get people involved with that can be a little difficult. And it takes a village, or a chapter in this case, to do so. But honestly, once you start, the effects ripple, as we see, like by being the first Panhellenic chapter to have this committee, we see that like change happens with leaders who are passionate, just like Abby, our president, and then Stormwold, she is our current VP of chapter development, who presented the Delta demo at CLC. Yeah, having their leadership too and being super passionate about this project and continuing it has, I mean, led us to here where we are now, and where I get to have a voice and talk about what we're doing and emphasize how important it is to continue the DEI work in all chapters. Now that all of USF Panhellenic has some form of it, yeah, as I said, we're looking to work together, because it's not a competition. We all want progress and change at all. And there's definitely the stereotype that, you know, like that all like chapters kind of like fight, but that's really not the case at all in real life experience, where we just want to work together and, you know, achieve change. That's the end goal. We are looking to do so much learning ourselves, and a lot more work is to be done. Us ourselves, we are not like the be all end all of this, of social justice. This is only the beginning, I think. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you've set a precedent in Tri-Delta. You've set a precedent on the campus, right, at San Francisco, and then you're setting precedents within Tri-Delta, you know, as other chapters are learning from your chapter, right? As we get into this year, you know, all of Tri-Delta's collegiate chapters will have DEI committees, right, and space to have those conversations. Not every chapter, not every member is at the same point in their journey, but the conversations are taking place and creating the humanity, right, that you described, which is a beautiful thing. And that the growth that comes on the back end of that is outlined in Tri-Delta's ritual. It is the absolute reason we're here. It's the reason our founders thought we ought to be here. The work was different in 1888, but the base, right, the basis for the work was really the same, to address at the time, you know, the marginalization of women. Right, we were an experiment on college campuses in 1888. I think we have proven up that that experiment was successful. Case in point, hello, you're gonna change the world. And speaking of, right, you have talked about with us, you know, prior to being on the podcast, that this work, the work you've done as a member of Tri-Delta in this space, has given you even more confidence and leadership skills, and that you've been able to apply those skills elsewhere, right, in your collegiate journey and outside of your collegiate journey. So tell us more about what you're doing, because we want to know.
The past couple semesters, I've been co-facilitating an intergenerational racial justice and anti-ageist workshop. There's a class at USF, and it is actually called Dance in the Community. And I never participated in the class, but I got to co-facilitate with the professor who teaches there, and then another wonderful artist from San Francisco, Liv and Evan. And they have been doing this intergenerational workshop with an elderly activity center. So they've been collaborating with USF, and we got to do this racial justice workshop with people my age and also folks who are, I forget the age range, but it's wonderful to see an intergenerational workshop working together, because sometimes we have, you know, about each other, the like older people will be like, oh, the young people. And then the young people will be like, ah, the old people. So it's really beautiful to see and have those conversations again, because they're difficult to have. In some of moments, a lot of things I have learned from DEI myself, I've applied to this workshop because of those uncomfortable conversations. I take the skills that I have been preaching myself and preaching to my chapter, and I've been able to apply it in this workshop. So I've been doing that. And then in the summer, I will be leading a bunch of teenagers from San Diego to become leaders within their community. So I'm super excited for that. And I'll be doing that with my best friend. So I have a lot to look forward to. But yeah, a lot of this stuff, these leadership skills, I have learned from being in Tri-Delta and the DEI committee. And I've been learning to use that troublemaking self that I had in high school for better and channeling it through this. So a lot of those leadership skills have come from this and learning how to use my voice in an effective manner.
Well, I mean, I could not, first of all, I'm privileged to be your sister. You are brave and bold and kind. Right. You are doing it all. Hate to speak for Sarah Ida, but I think she'd be really proud. She was sort of known as a bit of a troublemaker herself. Go figure. Right. So you are doing all good things. Thank you so much, really, for your leadership within your chapter at USF, within the community. And, you know, you're changing the world. Right. Sister by sister and intergenerational partner by partner, and now teenagers in San Diego. That's how it goes. Right. That's how Tri-Delta leverages our collective influence in service and kindness to others. Right. That's the vision. So thank you so much. I know our listeners are going to want to hear more about what the chapter is doing at USF and how they can find and follow you and Epsilon Rho online. So give us all the details there.
Yeah, so we are pretty active on, our chapter is pretty active on social media. So our main one is USFCA Tri-Delta. And then we have a separate diversity and inclusion page, which is USFCA diversity.inclusion. And in the bio of the Tri-Delta or the Epsilon Rho page, it'll have also the @ for the Diversity and Inclusion Committee Instagram page.
Outstanding. And know that I'll be keeping an eye on you too, Melanie. I know you're headed to grad school on the back end of an early graduation, semester early. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So please don't forget Tri-Delta. You know, it's a lifelong thing. So we're with you forever. And I count on you being with us too and helping us to continue to learn and deepen our understanding and truly lean into allyship. Right. As a way to create humanity. So thank you so much for the conversation today and for all you do for Tri-Delta.
And thank you for having me and getting to use my voice and speak out about these things. So I also thank you guys.
Many thanks to Melanie Velasquez and our San Francisco chapter for using their voice on this important Lead Now work. For more information on Lead Now and Tri-Delta's commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, please check out the Lead Now page on tridelta.org. Also on our website, you can stay up to date on more exciting events, programs, celebrations, milestones, all coming your way this summer during our Summer of Sisterhood. And don't forget to send us any podcast ideas you have. We love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@trideltaeo.org. And please like, subscribe, and rate our podcast. We love 5-star ratings at Let's Talk Tri-Delta. Thanks again for talking Tri-Delta with us today. Join us next time. Stay safe and bring you.